There is a fairly recent movie out called The Saddest Music in the World. It's a kind of surrealist comedy set in Winnipeg about a beer baroness who puts on a contest to find the saddest music in the world. Now, I just heard about this movie as I was preparing this audio component to go along with the Washington State Magazine article about playing apt music on the radio during times of public distress, and I'm regarding it as a kind of warning against becoming too earnest about it all. It is a danger, and we'll see what we can do about providing an antidote or taking our earnest temperature along the way here. The article does describe, as I read back over it, an interesting set of circumstances wherein an individual, in this case me, is supposed to choose and present music for a private reaction to a public event, music for grieving en masse. It's an odd concept, and as I note in the article, full of dangers, fatuousness, cliches, all the intellectual bankruptcy you've come to associate with your favorite broadcast medium. And these weaknesses are made all the more glaring, depending on the intensity of the tragedy or the distress or the loss. Nevertheless, Washington State Magazine and I thought it might be a good idea that with an article that depends so much on sounds, you ought to have a chance to hear some of those remarkable sounds. The American composer Lou Harrison attached an epigraph to one of his works, part of which we're listening to now, his Symphony No. 2, called the Elegiac Symphony. It's a quotation from Horace, which says, "Bitter sorrows will grow milder with music." Over the next several minutes, we'll listen to a sampling of some of the pieces of music that I put on the radio, some with listener help. The feedback was immediate. Right after we found out in Minnesota that Paul Wellstone, our senior senator, had been killed in a light plane crash in northern Minnesota less than 2 weeks before the election of 2002. October 25th, 2002 was the date. It was a Friday. And we're going to hear the voice of John Gielgud reciting, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say, the music of Shakespeare, his sonnet number 73. And the words, when I heard them, seemed devastatingly appropriate. And along with those words, the last few moments of a concerto which Edward Elgar wrote just after the conclusion of a war, which, according to almost everyone, in the summer of 1914 was supposed to be a quick and glorious affair, but which dragged on for over 4 years and claimed 8.5 million lives. The Cello Concerto in E Minor by Edward Elgar, written in the winter of 1918 and 1919, right after the conclusion of the First World War.
That time of year thou mayst in me behold, when yellow leaves, or none, or few, do hang upon those boughs which shake against the cold. Bare ruined choirs, where late the sweet birds sang. In me thou seest the twilight of such day, as after sunset fadeth in the west, which by and by black night doth take away, death's second self, that seals up all in rest. In me thou seest the glowing of such fire that on the ashes of his youth doth lie, as the deathbed whereon it must expire, consumed with that which it was nourished by. This thou perceivest, which makes thy love more strong, to love that well which thou must leave ere long.
Of Edward Elgar's Cello Concerto, played by Jacqueline Dupré, and relatively young John Gielgud reciting the sonnet number 73 by Shakespeare. As this music played on the radio and the news of Paul Wellstone's death began to sink in, we were hearing from listeners expressing various things, hoping to hear certain pieces of music, hoping that the radio station would be a place they could go that day for consolation, catharsis, whatever it happened to be. And a number of them counseled, don't forget, Senator Wellstone was Jewish. So the afternoon included a gentle prayer, a Kaddish, sung by Miriam Mignaggi, and also Ernest Bloch's Hebraic rhapsody, Shlomo, or Solomon, played by Mstislav Rostropovich. And the second of the three Chichester Psalms by Leonard Bernstein, composed in 1965, is a setting in Hebrew of the words, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Bernstein's setting for boy soprano and chorus is beautiful enough, but what makes this particular piece so remarkable, especially as a memorial for the senator, was the contrasting section, going from the 23rd Psalm to a quotation from the 2nd Psalm, which is a description of the world right now. Why do the nations rage, and the people imagine a vain thing? It's a timeless conflict, and it was at this point, I think, when conflict became a part of it, that the whole enterprise moved beyond the single dimension of funeral dirge to something more realistic that involved the world and life, as well as mourning a death. Early in the 20th century, the Italian composer Ottorino Respighi was a kind of musical conservationist, and he was out to preserve what he considered an endangered species, that is, melody. And he revived a number of tunes that had been nearly forgotten from the 16th and 17th centuries in Italy and in France by composers known and unknown, and he orchestrated them in a series of three suites called Ancient Airs and Dances. Some are lively, and some are elegiac and flat-out beautiful. This particular tune was originally written by a 17th century French priest named Marin Mersenne, who, among other things, used to spend a good deal of time trying to keep his friend, René Descartes, out of trouble with the French ecclesiastical authorities. Another Frenchman of the 20th century, Maurice Durufle, left us some musical and spiritual artifacts of universal beauty and meaning. His four motets on Gregorian themes, the first of which begins with the words Ubi caritas et amor, Deus ibi est, where charity and love are, there is God. Using the same choral forces, you can swing, as emotions demand, from the sweetness of the Durufle motet to something that reminds us starkly of the facts. Aulus Solonen's Winter Was Hard. This is a musical memorial, one of the six piano pieces comprising Maurice Ravel's Le Tombeau de Couperin, both a tribute to the French 18th century musical tradition and individual memorials for friends of Ravel's who died in the First World War. Thank you. This is by Beethoven. Sometimes we forget, when we dwell on the heroic aspects of Beethoven's music, that he also gave us some of the most supremely comforting music anyone ever has. In the case of this piece, his Piano Concerto No. 5, the Emperor Concerto, the person he was comforting must have been himself. He knew that he was losing his hearing before he was 30, but by the age of 39, he could no longer perform effectively as a soloist in his own works. And so the Piano Concerto No. 5 was his last concerto and the first one he was not able to premiere himself. One notable feature about this Beethoven Piano Concerto is that this beautiful middle movement slides without pause into the robust, stirring finale. And what better all-purpose piece could there be to serve as both benediction and celebration of a life, both to mourn the loss of a friend and to celebrate the energy of a great soul? We've been on quite a journey here, and we've listened to quite a lot of music. And it might be a good time to check in on just how we've done in our vow way back when not to be too solemn about the whole thing. We're talking, after all, about radio, a terribly ephemeral medium. It is a satisfying experience to think that you're involved in programming that might at least be knocking on the door of meaning, if not profundity. But it is gone as soon as it's heard. The medium continues to demand to be fed new material all the time, and the world at large continues to provide stimuli for the medium to respond to. I'm Bill Morlock. Thanks very much for listening to the music and the musings. Candide, Voltaire's perfect little novel, was, in a way, about the pitfalls of being absolutely certain that we know the deeper meanings to the world's tragedies. And 200 years after it was written, the finale to Leonard Bernstein's musical treatment of Candide put it like this: "We're neither pure, nor wise, nor good. We do the best we know."
You've been a fool, and so have I, but come and be my wife, and let us try before we die to make some sense of life. Chop our wood and make a